Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, in our first Zine Month special episode, we have Horse Majeure by Tom Lavery and Mission Impossible by Stefan Hans. Enjoy!
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are talking to Tom Lavery about his comedy TTRPG zine, Horse Majeure. Tom, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. I will be honest, we wanted to have this game on the show because it had one of the funnest descriptions of anything we got. So to start us off, can you tell us what is this game?
Gladly. Horse Majeure is a comedy RPG intended for like one-shot silliness where two players act out as one half of two people in a horse costume. Or better put, it's a silly game about pretending to be two people disguised in a horse costume.
And audience, now you can see why we had to talk to Tom.
And you don't actually have to have a horse costume to play, just to be sure.
That is quite easily the most commonly asked question. So I'm really glad I could put that to bed. No, it should be greatly rewarded if someone does show up to this table in a horse costume, but it is not necessary.
And what is the stretch goal level at which I will receive a horse costume?
You know, I didn't have stretch goals, so I could think of if it goes really, really well, I'll get back to you on that.
That's what we like to hear.
I think the other reason that we knew we wanted to talk to you, and at time of listening, the campaign will be going, so people may not have seen this, but your Kickstarter pre-save page, You made a bold move that I don't think we'd recommend to everyone, but is perfect and hilarious for this game, where your Kickstarter pre-save page, no text, just a drawing of a two-part horse costume with a totally neutral face drawn on it. Cracked me up. I guess I want to ask, like, where did this game start for you? Where'd the idea come from?
That's a tough one because it honestly just sort of arrived fully formed in my mind. There was a, how do I put this? I tend to work backwards. Like the funny joke happens first and then I work out why it was funny, if that makes sense. Like
sure.
I'll crack myself up over some silly idea and then go, wait, actually that's got legs. In this case, four. And I thought I could do something with this. A lot of creative people probably have this same problem where I've got ideas left and right and projects left and right that I really want to chase and see out there in the world. But I always struggle with scope and scale. And, you know, when you're trying to just live your life and, you know, you've got a job and you're doing all the other stuff, finding the time to get anything out there can be really daunting, especially when you're just one person. So stuff like ZineQuest or ZineQuest, I thought this is a perfect opportunity to do something just small and simple, and really speaks to what I love about TTRPGs. So that's where I sort of came from.
I love that. I feel like every project always has that, like, that scope creep, and it also every project has that thing of, is this the thing I should be spending my time on? I've got 10 ideas. They're all good for different reasons. I want to do them all, but I have to pick one. You were showing us the zine before we started recording. Can you tell us what people will see when they see this zine in front of them?
Certainly. So you'll get the beautiful sort of graffiti front cover that I was sort of aiming for to sort of really sell the abstract absurdity of the whole thing. And then when you open the first page, you'll get a lovely diagram of your player sheet, like your player character creator, which is essentially just a man in a horse costume, two men in a horse costume. It'll explain the powers that you can do and like the moves that you can do. The second page is exactly how the system works, or the second spread of these eight pages. And it's sort of fundamentally quite similar to Powered by the Apocalypse, but it's far more collaborative in that rather than having two dice, you have one each and you've just got to work together and hope.
Oh, that's a fun, like, you end up in a position where you roll together and it's like, it was your die that
exactly.
made it, so we lost.
Exactly. But I do, like, to keep some player agency, I wanted to make sure that, you know, there were things that didn't require a dice, because everything requires a dice roll, except for player one's powers, which are to neigh or to bite. Like, you can do that as a free action at any time, and it will always succeed. And then player two, the back end, you will always be able to kick or fart, like, at any point, and you will always successfully do that.
The second you said the back end, I was like, you better say fart next. You
100%. 100%. Like, and I'm very glad to say that in testing, I've had some very dear friends of mine back in the UK play this game, and the amount of gems they got out of by kicking and farting their way through just warmed my heart. Like, they did Night of the Proms, I think, and it worked really well. So I'm very pleased to hear how they did ask me, though. They sent me a voice memo to clarify a rule, which I didn't anticipate having to do. But they asked if a whinny counted as a nay. And I had to say, yes, it's basically just a quiet nay. So maybe save it for stealth purposes. But yes, ultimately, it counts.
Well, now we know.
This is my favorite thing about, I love rules light RPGs in particular, when it comes to like comedic play and stuff, because you make a rule and you give players just enough where they're like, well, this is all the paint I have to play with. So like, how far can I push the color blue to, like, you know, paint the Sistine Chapel? It's like, you know, you give them this little thing and they're just like, now I'm going to use that for everything. I'm going to use that for the scope of what I want to do, what I would do with like a 20 stat character sheet.
Exactly. When you have the ability to nay, everything looks like a nail.
Yes.
There's a joke
there
somewhere.
You go.
I didn't
there
quite
you
find
go.
It. But it's close.
No, that's ultimate. Like, I much prefer rules like RPGs personally. Just going back to that whole scope and creep notion from earlier, I've been running a root RPG game for some work friends. And the amount of time it took me to just sort of prep a session, even with the materials I had, I was going mad. So when I open up a book and it's just like, oh, don't worry about it. Make it up. Like, I love that. I love being able to just like, oh, if it makes sense, go for it. You ultimately are here to tell stories. And if it works, it works.
I'm curious, sort of, because as somebody who's designed like comedic forward games, and like, obviously it's like, it's an interesting challenge to think about, like, how do you think about getting people to have a comedic experience at the table when you like sat down to design this game? Like, obviously one way is like you give them a fart move, but like what like from a design perspective, how did you think about making sure that like the experience of play was as funny as this very funny premise that you set out for the game?
So ultimately I felt that you have to just set the scene as a ridiculous circumstance. Like, out the gate, you're two people in a horse costume, or two raccoons in a horse, or whatever the circumstances, you are in a ridiculous position. And the rules state clearly that you are a horse, and that is your commitment to that is absolute. So immediately you've set very stringent parameters, and essentially you're just waiting for all the players to keep dishing up punchlines. So like, I had no doubt that they would, no one's going to come at horse majeure, grim, dark, dead serious, you know?
Well, now.
Challenge accepted, sir. You will rue the day. You will ruin it.
That would be very funny. So yeah, so ultimately, I just wanted to give them the tools necessary and hope that they would naturally fall into the slapstick Rube Goldberg machine I'd built.
I really want someone to play the fart move for the drama of it, rather than the comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's so many kinds of farts. I feel like you could play it up. So we touched on the mechanics a little bit. You said you split the die across Powered by the Apocalypse, but could you just give us an overview about, like, what does this game look like to play? How many people are sitting down to play? How do we move through this story?
Yeah, so essentially you've got one player who's obviously the games master, who's setting the scene. And you can do that with drawn maps. That's one of the tier options at like $5. I'll give you three relatively crudely drawn maps to sort of inspire a game. But beyond that, you're playing in groups of two. So if you wanted just a small intimate game of just three players, you're set. Beyond that, you'd have increments of two, so three, five, etc. Each player gets one dice. They decide, best horse impression determines who's player one, who's player two. So that's how you work out who's going to be the butt.
So real quick, Elliot, can you give me your best horse impression? We're going to see who's player one and player two.
All right.
All right, not bad.
Not bad. Oh.
Wow. Okay. All right. All right. Came
Brian
to play.
Takes that for the commitment, I think. That's...
Now, wait till you hear my fart impression.
I'm sorry, Tom. Please continue. I just had to do that bit.
Yeah, that's perfect. So, yeah, essentially at that point, the game begins and each horse decides what their move is going to be. That could be something as simple as climbing up the stairs. You know, like one of the maps is a haunted house, and somewhere in that map, there I've sort of dropped little areas where that would be a good spot for an apple, like buried in a grave in the backyard. Wonderful, or you know, in a chest in the basement next to the boiler. It's Granny Smith's house, so there could be apples anyway.
God damn it. That's so good.
Thank you. At which point, you're trying to roll the dice. So much like Power to the Apocalypse, if the dice are matching, that's a perfect success. So if you both roll a 1, 2, or 6, as in 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, etc., it's a perfect success, and it's better than you'd expected. So you get what you wanted and then some. And that's down to the GM's discretion to reward you, and hopefully in a silly way. One dice off, so if a 1 and a 2 from player 2, then you accomplish the goal, that's fine. Two off, it's a mixed success, which is something goes right for you, but with a complication. So yes, you definitely went up the stairs, but in doing so, you might have tripped at the top and knocked something over, caused a noise, caused a ruckus, etc. Three off, that's a failed result. You're no closer to the delicious apple. That's just, you've got to think of another way. You didn't even get up the stairs, you fell straight away. Four off, that's a critical failure, and that makes the horse tolerance meter go up, because ultimately there is a point where if you saw in real life two people in a horse costume walking around, you would want nothing to do with that. you would try desperately to go about your day and ignore that.
If it was unexpected, absolutely.
I don't know. Listen, we live in New York City. The subway is a strange place.
Would you go up to someone on the subway who's dressed as a horse costume and ask, what's this about?
All right, point taken.
Yeah.
So you would try and go about your day, even if it wasn't, you'd hope that they're a mascot for something. You'd hope that they're a marketing ploy or a drunken stag do something. You'd want nothing to do with it, is my point. Or you'd gawk at best. But eventually that patience has to wear thin. And you would be getting up to such malarkey and such shenanigans that someone will step in, be it security, the police, any citizen. They're just like, that's it. I've reached my horse tolerance. I'm dealing with this. And that's you out of the game, essentially. You've lost this comedic one shot. However, if it's five or if it's the worst dice roll you can get, like a 1 and a 6, then that's a catastrophic failure and your costume rips in half. And you've got three turns to try and reconnect. Three turns to do a successful dice roll just to get back together. Otherwise, you're out. It's pandemonium. The facade is gone. Everyone realizes that you're not actually a horse. That's it. That's the end.
Man, I really enjoy that mechanic. Also, just as a thematic thing. Like, if you are together, as you are in a horse costume, that's success. The further apart you get, the more you are ripping
like
apart.
Literally and pulling apart, yeah.
Man, I am a sucker for a thematic mechanic.
Thank you. Big really inspirations like for this were things like Octodad and Honey Heist, those kind of really silly and simple balancing acts.
I was really delighted to hear that this is like not just two players and one GM. You can play it with multiple pairs of horse costumes, which is like a really fun twist on the formula of like getting a group together for like a rules light one shot like Honey Heist or something like that, where it's like, oh, you're pairing people off now. I don't think I've seen that in another game, and that feels like a fun added dynamic to have like three horses, six players, and one GM. Feels like it would just be maximum chaos.
We had the game that my friends played back home. They had three horses in total, and the horse names were quite fun. You had we had Cheese, we had Puddle Friend Japan, and Creeping Extremist. And I believe Creeping Extremist was, what did they say? I think Creeping Extremist was body tackled off of the stage as they tried to do a leaping jump and bite the apple tiara off of the opera singer's head. But they failed. So that was them out of the game.
This is also interesting, because if you said to me, hey, I'm gonna have six players play, I'm gonna run a game for six players, I immediately think, oh, that's a bit of a daunting number. Like, I've done it, and it's, but that's a lot of people to finagle. Whereas three horses, like I've got three teams of two, that feels way more manageable. And so like, it feels like it's an even better game for a large group doing a one shot in a way that that can sometimes be really daunting for a GM if you have all of a sudden eight honey heist bears.
Yeah. I mean, my whole goal, my whole ethos for this game was to take all of the daunt out of it. Like, I wanted no daunting prospect. I wanted the daunt to come from the players, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Right.
Nothing from this cute zine. It's all from the people who are staring at you.
And so, Tom, one of the things we always like to ask people is, like, why Zine Month? What brought you to making this game for Zine Month?
Well, very critically, Zine Month to me, I find is a beautiful opportunity to sort of engage in a community with something small, something achievable, something that can be executed without the limitations of it prevent scope creep and getting too out of hand. It's very clearly defined as small, self-published, like it's fun. You know, it's a wonderful community. Some of the past Z months I've seen, I've really enjoyed even seeing big creators take little gambles on very small esoteric things, like Tim Hutchings when he did ZymeQuest and he did this ridiculous 3D glasses, look at it in different colors, you'll see different games situation. I thought that was absolutely genius. So yeah, it was just the right time, the right moment that I wanted to sort of join in with.
For this Kickstarter, why don't you tell people what you can get if you support this campaign?
So taking a sort of get, because the most important thing to me is to put this game in front of people for fun. So there will be a one-page version just for free, like out there on social media pages for the game and on, I'm making a website currently for it that'll launch on day one. So anyone can play it, no problems. For the Kickstarter, for two whole Canadian dollars, you'll get the zine print file format so that you can have a little copy that you can print off at any printer at home and carry it around with you. Oh, and as well as that, you get a bonus game on the inside on the reverse of the zine. If you fold it out, there's a sort of fun, silly racing game that, in case, you know, if you just don't want to GM, if you don't want to engage in all that theater of mind and you just want to play a silly game, then I've sort of retconned the system or finangled the system so that you can just have a silly racing game with all your friends, just all laid out on the table. And the same kind of like tear in half mechanics are at play, but like a complete horse has to make it across the finish line to count, et cetera. Like it's like you can fart and knock everyone over. It's blah. Anyway. So you get that with the $2 tier with the print file, as well as that you get some little standees that I've done to sort of fill in that you can print off and pretend. They all cut in half and mix and match as well, so you can have any configuration of horse.
Love that.
For $5, I'm doing three double-sided maps, so the Granny Smith haunted house, the International Space Station, and some other, like, I think a hospital is the third one, I'm not sure.
Sorry, I'm imagining the fun of 0G with this
game.
That's
right.
Yeah.
I'm doing the one side is the inside and the other side is the outside, and the outside is largely just space.
it's just you colored in black with crayons.
More or less. and then just purely as a way, if you love this idea and I've caught your attention and you want to see more from me, there's an exuberant $50 tier where I will draw you your own custom little silly horse person. I don't expect anyone to back that one. That's purely just as a, if you really, really want to support me, I'll draw you a silly horse.
Hey, never say never.
I mean, who doesn't want their own customized silly horse?
That's how I feel.
Especially when you see the little horse illustration. It is very charming. I really like it.
It's great. Yeah. It's the entire Kickstarter pre-save page. That's how strong this horse is.
Well, I didn't want to show my whole hand, you know?
Of course.
Yeah.
You just show the horse.
Exactly. You get it. You can see that. You know what's up.
It's like there's something you're doing which I love. Like what you said about limiting scope And as somebody who failed at that twice in doing Zine Month, where I was supposed to make zines and I ended up making books because they got out of hand, they grew too big. I do love that you are doing the like single sheet 8-page zine. Like it's like here are the files to print at home. Like it's just like it's the very classic zine culture that I think is to the spirit of Zine Month. So it's really exciting. I think like $2 is a steal.
$2 Canadian, so that's like not even real money.
$2 free. Canadian, it's yeah. free. Sorry to our Canadians.
for the Americans out there, that's a rounding error. Get this game for free. Come on.
But yeah, I do love that you're leaning into the like real like attainable small zine of it all, and it's such. Then you can put it in your pocket, bring it to cons and stuff. This feels like a great con game, so I do hope people check it out. I think this is a really special one.
I have like probably a stack of 10 that I keep in my jacket pocket that I just leave around places at the moment around Ottawa.
Oh, amazing!
I've got a friend of mine, Tim, is an artist, and he'll draw these crazy, weird drawings with like weird sayings on them, and they're just like absurdist pictures, and he'll just leave them around New York City and like we'll take pictures of them and post it on his Instagram, be like, if anyone is at 14th and 7th, there's a thing hiding under a bush or something. And every time I see one of those, I'm like, this is just cool. It's fun to like just be walking around and discover something.
There's something beautiful about like the underground energy that comes with zines and how that they inevitably find a community anyway. I dearly love that, especially like with social media at the moment being a true hellscape. There's something earnestly wonderful about local scenes, local community building. I really appreciate that a great deal.
So Tom, with our Zine Month interviews this year, we're trying out a new segment, if you'll work through it with us, which we're tentatively calling A for Advice. Are we sticking with that, Brian?
I mean, not if you say it like that. All right, so Tom, we're doing a new segment this Zine Month. We're calling it A for Advice.
Brilliant.
Wow, what a good segment title. Oh my
I
God.
Know.
So essentially we want to ask, you know, we've done this a previous year. We've spoken to many designers from the beginnings of their careers to well into their careers. Is there a problem you are facing in your Zine Month journey that we can help get you through, give you advice about, like something that you're worried about headed into the campaign that maybe we can help provide some guidance on?
Certainly. I mean, this is the very first time I've ever done anything like this and gotten to this stage, if that makes sense. I've got projects that I want to bring out in the future. I've got much bigger scope games that I dearly love, but haven't the foggiest idea where to start. So really, I suppose the fate of those projects hinges on the success of this one. So my ask would be, what would your advice be for getting as many eyeballs as possible on this Kickstarter, getting as many people into this game and talking about this game as I can?
First step, talk at the table.
Hey.
First step, this interview. Yeah. Well, one thing I would say is like, I think don't put too much pressure on yourself for this, the hinge of the success of your future projects hinging on the success of this one. I think that like that's putting a lot on yourself, and like, you know, you're gonna make this, like you've already made this game, and nobody can take that away from you, and that rules. And so it's like, you've already done it once, I know you can do it again no matter how this campaign goes. But yeah, in terms of getting eyeballs on it, I think I would highlight something Tony from Plus One just said that we talked to as our sort of kickoff interview, which is try to have something every 2 to 3 days that you can talk about, like whether it's like sharing a mechanic you're really excited about from the game, or like a little like piece of art that you doodled about it or something, or like, because I think this is just you, right? There's not a team.
Yeah, it's just me.
Yeah. So I think finding something that you're excited about talking about the game, and just like not being afraid to, I think I maybe gave this advice to the last person we talked to also, is like, don't be afraid to just like shout about it all the time, because people aren't seeing it nearly as much as it feels like they are when you're doing the social media game. Like it's like, just you got to be prepared to be annoying for a couple weeks, I think, is the thing. Just like, it's like, and I promise you're not as annoying as you think you are, and everyone's doing it.
I think this is actually a great project to highlight an idea of, ultimately, this is an 8-page zine. And you might think there's not a lot of stuff to show off, but there totally is. You could, A, just show off the horse art and just talk about this weird horse idea. You can talk about the conceit of the game, which is already very fun and funny. You can talk about the mechanics, because the mechanics are really cool and thematic. You can do a flip through of the book, and you can like highlight any fun stories you've gotten from the playtesting. That's like five things right there that are easy and fun, and also like each of them are interesting. Like if I'm at all interested in the game and someone's like, let me flip through the book, I'm like, ooh, I'll lean in and check that out. You also have a whole bonus game on the back you can go through. So like everything I just said for the main game, you can do again for the other game.
That's a very good point. Like,
yeah. And then I think the last thing I'd say is like, it seems like from playtesting, you've got some really fun stories. And I think those are the kinds of things people would be interested to hear as well. Just like sharing the wild story of the biting the tiara off the opera singer's head and stuff. Just like, what does a game of force majeure look like? This, like cool stuff. So I think you're doing the right stuff. I think, you know, it's going to feel bad. Crowdfunding feels bad. It also will feel really good, but there will be days that it'll feel bad for sure.
A thing to also just like put in your, I feel like I want to put this in everyone's ear, especially if it's their first time doing a crowdfunding campaign. The first 24 to 48 hours, you're going to feel pretty good because like pledges will come in because it's the first 2 days. And then like day 3, 4, up to like day 28 will happen. And it's going to feel bad. There's just like, there's a dip that happens in every crowdfunding campaign, regardless of if it's Roan, Rook, and Deckard raising like $1 million or a small like 8-page zine only looking for, you know, $1,000 or something. It always happens. It always feels bad. Just push through, because then those last 2 days also help kind of bring things to a close. Usually the first 48 and the last 48 are where you make like, what is it, 50%? Of your funds? Is that
it's something like 40 to 60% of your is in the first two and the last two. How many, what's the total length of your campaign?
It's running from the 1st to the 28th. So all of February.
1st to the 28th.
Excellent.
You got 4 weeks. I fully believe you will make it. And
how much are you hoping to raise for this?
I mean, the goal is set at $2. So hopefully one sale will do. But,
oh, that's good. That's very good.
The other thing I was going to say was share your successes. So once you fund, hopefully on day one,
funded in, I expect a funded in 2 seconds badge.
I'm so excited to put that on to update the front page.
Funded straight away.
Listen, Tom, just shoot me a Discord message right before it launches. I'll get you there in the first minute, I promise.
Yeah. No, we'll make sure. It's going to be great. I think you're doing all the right things. So I think, don't hold yourself to some like it has to be well for you to keep making games. You made a game, keep making games. That'd be my last thought on that.
Appreciate it. As long as people like it, that's all that matters, really.
I like it.
I already like it.
Fantastic.
You got to.
I was just going to ask you, what would your guy's course name be if you had to come up with one?
Oh, if we were playing together?
Yeah.
Do you want to pick a word and then I pick a word?
Yeah. Well, I'm the butt, so you get to pick the first word.
This is Halcyon.
Horse.
I'll see you on the horse. You know, that's what it said.
Well, that's a horse, baby.
Is it a funny subversion of what you wanted me to do, or could I not think of any other word than horse? The world may never know.
All right, let's give it back to me as well. You do the first word, not the second word.
Okay.
You can't say horse.
I can't say horse.
No.
Scintillating.
My first thought was conversation.
That's a fantastic horse name.
And it's scintillating conversation coming around the bend by two horses, by two legs. It's scintillating conversation going, scintillating conversation for the win.
And isn't that all what an RPG game is?
And that's what it is.
Tom, thank you so much for coming to the table. We have one more question we like to ask everyone who comes on, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you to give us a recommendation. Normally, it's for anything in the world, but for Zine Month, We'd love it if you could recommend another creator or another Zine Month project that you think looks particularly interesting.
I do want to say straight off the bat, shout out to the Quinn's Quest Discord. They're wonderful people.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, love that. Love that.
And, oh, that was, yes, Caught in the Rain, a solo mystery TTRPG. I'm very excited about that by a Raven's Ridge Press. It just looks like this beautiful sort of film noir mystery game for solo journaling purposes. And mystery games have eluded me for years. There's no, in my mind, good way to do like a Columbo style TTRPG.
You said the magic word. I've been binging Columbo the past couple of weeks. I fucking love Columbo.
You said Brian's activation phrase.
Can I raise you then another recommendation?
Please.
Midsummer Murders is the British version of Columbo.
I'm clicking my pen and writing it down.
Midsummer Murders has to be with mine and my partner's favorite show. We've just rewatched all of our favorite episodes. There is a remarkable episode where members of the Pudding Club are turning up dead and no one quite knows why or how. And then by the end, you find out it's a man with a big spoon running around trying to cover up stolen artifacts from a museum. And if that doesn't sell you, then I'm afraid you shouldn't play Horse Mashore. It's not for you.
don't do it. That's so great.
Hell yeah. Great. So one more time, what was the recommendation?
Caught in the Rain, a solo mystery TTRPG by Raven's Ridge Press.
We will link that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Tom Lavery, for coming to the table. It was such a pleasure talking to you. One more time, where can people find you online and where can they find Horse Mashore this zine month?
They can find me on Blue Sky at Tom Lavery. That's just my handle, Blue Tom Lavery. I'm on Instagram and all the other places, but you know, Blue Sky is my preferred method. Horse Mashore can be found on Kickstarter February 1st for a whole $2 Canadian, or for free day one on my own website, tomlavery.com, which is still in development, but should be ready by then.
So you can get it for free at tomlavery.com or basically for free on Kickstarter because it's only $2 Canadian.
Yes. If you want a bunch of bonuses, that comes with the $2.
I just had to get one more shot across the bow to our friends in Canada.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. There are specific friends who know that they're being targeted as they listen to this.
Cyber Plus Punk Overload is the first official expansion for the award-winning, ultra-stylish, rules-light cyberpunk game, Cyber Plus Punk, that is specifically designed for action-packed one-shot sessions. In Cyber Plus Punk, you are a runner, a merc, a criminal, an activist living on the edge and running in the shadows of a gritty, ultra-violent world. Infiltrate a mega prison, escape a bloody reality show, solve a time loop, race vehicles in the Badlands, or escape the Netscape. One-shot scenarios, gear catalogs, plug-in rule sets, and complete settings made by an all-star cast of game designers and stylishly bundled into three sleek thematic packs. So go back Cyber Plus Punk Overload on Kickstarter to get the limited edition version with a slick hollow foil sleeve. Just search CBR plus PNK colon overload on Kickstarter. That's CBR plus PNK colon overload.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder. Podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are talking with Stefan Hans about his Zine Month project, Mission Impossible. Stefan, welcome to the table. So good to have you.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
A pun this early in the morning? I think not. I'm just kidding. I love puns.
Love puns. We love puns here. We love comedy games. Stefan, to start off, could you just give us the elevator pitch for Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible is a game where you play three raccoons in a trench coat. You have taken up abode in Agent Omega's apartment. Agent Omega is, of course, as we all know, the greatest super spy in the entire world. But he's gone missing, and all the raccoons are living in his apartment now. But they're still getting missions from the agency, so they have to keep fulfilling the missions if they want to keep living in the apartment, so that the agency never finds out that Agent Omega is gone. So you play three raccoons as a super spy, going on all sorts of missions and saving the world.
Hell yeah.
Okay, that's it. That's all we need.
All right, I think the listeners probably heard enough to go back, so yeah, go get it.
No, this is a very cool game. I was immediately, when I saw the Kickstarter page and the cover art for this, it was immediately like, you know, 1970s spy. You got kind of get shades of like Archer or something if you're into that cartoon. And immediately, that's right up my alley. And then you see your raccoons in a trench coat. I'm like, great, two for two. And then the last thing that this really checked for me that we're really excited to talk to you about is that this not only is just a zine or a book, this is a box set, which for Zine Month is a particularly grand project for this month. So I'd love to talk to you about why you wanted to make this game as a full box set and why you wanted to make it such a big project.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm certainly hoping it was a good idea, but I have the box set right here. I have the samples. It's all done. Everything is written and proofed, and they look beautiful. So I've learned lessons from previous Kickstarters where you do a Kickstarter and then you're just so stressed out because you want to get the project done afterwards. This time I got everything done 100% in the very beginning. So there's going to be no stress with it, thankfully. It's pretty cool because with the box set, I originally wrote the game for Pocket Quest on DriveThruRPG last year. And it was a heist-themed game. And then I started running it with my friends and I started making pieces for it and laminating the character cards and creating these little minis for it and giving them special coins they could flip. And I was like, man, this would be so cool if I could turn this into a box set because I think other people would like all these pieces. I've got a really cool company I work with overseas and they helped me source it all and it should happen. I'm very excited about it. It's the first time I've done one this big with this many different pieces combined in one box set, yeah.
I will say we have had people on this Zine Month series before who have come into Zine Month with everything completed. I don't think I've ever heard a Zine Month designer say, it's going to be no stress.
Yeah.
So I commend you for that.
Thanks. Yeah. My first one was back in like 2020 or 2021 with the original Space Aces zine. And I also had that pre-written in advance. So I was able to fulfill that. The one I did afterwards was my heartbreaker, which is like I called Voyages in Infinite Space, which is a whole galaxy of planets, like 60 different planets, thousands of missions and things you can explore in like a Futurama sort of world. And then it's got a box of cards, like hex cards that come with it. So you can set up your galaxy and explore on the table. But that took me, I did not have that pre-written and it ended up taking all of my energy for 2 years straight, pouring it into it. This time I learned I don't want to do that. I want to have everything pre-done. So man, no stress, fingers crossed.
So I'm curious, where did this idea kind of come from? Like, where did it start? Was it just like a silly idea that hit you one day? Or is it born of a love of media? Or where does it come from?
Well, I love raccoons. I mean, and who doesn't love three of them in a trench coat? I don't know. I grew up in the 90s as a kid, coming home watching after school cartoons like Darkwing Duck and Tailspin and that one with the sharks that shouted Jossum all the time when they fought bad guys.
Street Sharks.
There it is. You got it. Jossum.
Wait. What's it called?
Street Sharks? Did you ever watch Street Sharks?
Oh, Street Sharks. I forgot about Street Sharks.
Yeah.
I was just reminded a couple days ago of Samurai Tiger Pizza Cats.
Oh, I don't know that
one. I don't know that one.
It was like knockoff Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Hilarious.
So that kind of stuff, like it kind of shaped my childhood and my view of what I like to see in media. And I guess, I don't know, everything I write is trying to kind of recapture my childhood, which I guess is all we're trying to do in life, right? I also like games that are family friendly. So I can have kids over, have parents over. We can all play together without any hesitation. I don't have to rewrite a bunch of things so that the kids, so that I feel comfortable running it with children. So everything I try and do is family friendly. And I like the goofy feel of cartoons of that era. Everything, there was drama, there was, you know, excitement, but everything was safe. You knew the guy was Darkwing Duck was going to be fine in the end. He might end up, you know, getting punched a couple times, but he's not going to die. So it feels cozy. And in this day and age, I didn't find a lot of other RPGs. There's more now, but there's not a lot of them that have that cozy feel where you're just like, this is a fun place to play and it's not going to get dark real quick. And that's just where I like to stay with my games.
It's a good place to come in from of like, I know the vibe I want. Let's hit it. I'd love to hear more about the mechanics and the system for this game. What does a play session of Mission Impossible look like? And what are the mechanics that you use to play this game?
Yeah, so I wanted a game that could be played in, you know, 2 hours or less by an absolute new GM with absolute new players. I really love minimal mechanics games, like simple ones, like, you know, so Lasers and Feelings, Honey Heist, those are always the top of mind for me. Double-Edged Sword is the more simple those games are, the harder it is actually to run if you're a game master, because especially if you're inexperienced, you don't have a lot of the experience under your belt and the guidance and the comfortable feel to run those. So you got to kind of make something that feels very simple for the players, but very supportive for the game master. And that's what I tried to do with Mission Impossible. With a heist sort of game, you naturally look at Blades in the Dark as far as that rule set, because, I mean, it's basically the best that I've ever come across. But that's pretty complex. So I took that idea and simplified it down to the absolute basics I could think of so I could get some of those results without any of the crunch or any of the difficulty. The other thing I love is mini games and
Cesar Capaccioli.
There it is. He makes a push, the rule set, where you put every roll of the dice is a little mini game. It's a little, you giggle, you're excited because you can push your luck with every single time you roll the dice or make a decision. And I love that little extra element. After a dice is rolled, it's not done. You could choose to try and push it a little more. So taking those two ideas, the game is basically, it comes down to a coin flip. You flip your coin when you want to do something. And if you want, you can push your luck as a player and try and flip it again and combine the results. So you can get, you know, two very good rolls. You could get a mixed result. You get a terrible catastrophe. And it's all on your fault. So you're like, oh, I got a good result, but I think I can get a better one. And then you use the Blades in the Dark risk reward tool kind of settings. So the game master can say, okay, well, it's going to be a minimal reward because this isn't a very good thing, but you can try. And then they can push their luck and try and get a better result from that. So it's very simple as far as that goes. I've seen a lot of people run it and they parents with their kids or kids with their grandparents. And they're like, yeah, I got this running in 5 minutes. And they were laughing and playing and we had a great time in an hour and a half.
It's funny how much more effective I can imagine like having two flips is for the player, because I've sometimes had trouble with like PBTA systems where it's like failure, mixed success, complete success, because somehow I get lost in the middle sauce of like what a partial success looks like, or a success with a twist, or a success with a conflict. But having the two flips, it immediately tells you what it is. It's I succeeded and then I succeeded better. I succeeded and then I failed a bit. I failed a bit and then it worked out. I failed a bit and then I failed a bit more. Like, because you have those two steps, I can be like, okay, here's what I tried to do. That's what happened. Here's what I tried to do because of what that happened. And here's the result. Like, somehow it gives you that extra little like handhold of how to narrate the results of a coin flip.
Exactly. Yeah. And I even, because I run into the same too, we all run into the challenge of the mixed result. What does that mean? So I even put a little tool in there for the game master where you can roll and there's a D6 and get one of six different results. Like, oh, they lost a resource or a new threat manifest or something. So if you can't come up with something on the spot, you roll and there's your inspiration as well to help with that aspect of it.
I love push your luck mechanics. It's something that I really love in board game design, but you don't see as often in RPG design. And I feel like for like high stakes, you know, James Bond style spy missions, like that feels very of the genre.
Yeah. Tom Cruise jumping off an airplane into a train window that's going at
right.
The speed. Like, that's a coin flip at best.
My favorite thing about all those stunts from like Mission Impossible movies, like is the big stunt, the marquee stunt. Pretty much every single time it works, and then there's a complication in the middle of it. Like hanging off the C-47 and then all of a sudden someone is trying to open the door and it's the wrong door. Like, there's no time that Tom Cruise just looks good the whole time. It's always, he does a cool thing, and then something gets fucked up, and he's got to figure out how to solve it. And this really well replicates that, because it gives you, like, the two steps.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to ask, what's the bingo cards?
That's a fun mini game. I like mini games. I loaded Space Aces with them too. I like Mario Party, so I guess that just kind of sticks with me. I saw on somewhere that somebody made bingo cards for Delta Green once, and I just thought that is a great idea because it keeps the players thinking how they can act in genre. There's no real reward. I didn't want it to be a reward for getting bingo in mechanically, because I want it to keep mechanics minimal. But I went on T-Move and bought a bunch of raccoon stuffed animals. So when kids come over and play, the first kid to get bingo, I bring out a raccoon stuffed animal, and that's what they win as they get it.
Oh, that's great.
It could
that's
be, really you know, cute. Slice of pizza or top of billing for the game. But you think players aren't looking at it, but then halfway through the game, they're like, I got a bingo. And they're doing things that don't make sense. Like, why are you throwing a stick of dynamite at this point in the game? It makes them do silly antics to get those points. It just seems to really help keep everything in the genre and keep the feel of the game going.
I really like that you said the first thing you said when we brought that up was that it reinforces genre and helps the players reinforce genre, which I think is really smart. And I think my first thought was when you said you don't get anything for a bingo, I was like, but I want something for a bingo. I want a mechanical reward.
I want a raccoon stuffed animal.
I want a raccoon stuffed animal.
Exactly.
But I do really like that it's just this kind of like pure thing that's on the side. You can use it or you don't have to, but it just makes the game that little bit better. And, you know, the bingo itself is the reward.
I tested it with mechanical rewards and things, and then I tested it without, and it was the exact same results. People just had fun checking out boxes on their bingo cards. So I figured, hey, if you can take a mechanic or a rule out of a game and it doesn't hurt it whatsoever, it shouldn't be there in the first place. And that's just the minimal mindset I always have with designing. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm going to do it also for any other future game, because why not?
It also feels so like, as a player, now I have this like fun list of directions to guide myself, you know, without having to, like, especially for kids, it's like, then they don't have to come up with the telltale signs of a spy movie. They have like I see like Be the Bait is one of those. And so it's like, oh, now I'm going to like be thinking about, I need that for my bingo. So I'm going to try and get that into the story. It has that, like, it's a subtle mechanic. It's not like so in your face that it's a mechanic, but I bet like it does drive people to make certain decisions in a really interesting way.
I feel like it's also hard in genre games to sometimes remember the genre tropes that you're playing while you're playing a new thing. And just having a list right next to you is like, oh, great. I'll just do these. These are all fun.
And I can check it off. It's a checklist. This is amazing.
And who doesn't love a checklist? Ugh.
Yeah, PBTA games are great because you got the player guidebook, the moves you can do as that character, and it reinforces genre in that way. So this is just a kind of a similar way of keeping it on a specific level for everybody.
And so are players each playing an individual raccoon in the trench coat, or is everyone three raccoons? Is everyone the same three raccoons in a trench coat?
Each player gets to play one raccoon in a trench coat. You draw the role of your raccoon randomly. So the specific skill, you could be, you know, and I kind of took the ideas from Leverage, the TV show. You have the muscle, the mastermind. You've got the thief, and then I needed an extra, so you've got the crazy one. There's always one, you never know what he's going to do. And they each have their own little special, you know, or they'll get little rewards if they do certain things, like raising mayhem and doing something crazy. A lot of it was from Grant Howitt's Honey Heist, right? He kind of used this similar ideas as well. And then as a team, you decide who you want to be in the trench coat. So I want to be the head, I want to be the arms, I want to be the legs. And you try and navigate as a group of three swaying raccoons in a trench coat going back and forth, pretending to be a human. So, you know, I want to walk that way. Well, you're going to have to flip for it because you can't see, or you have to peek out. And if you peek out, well, that's going to raise some suspicion because someone's going to see a little something coming out of your trench coat there. When you want to do something complex that takes two raccoons working together, the one other little mechanic is they both have to flip a coin. And then you add the results. So there's no small consequences when two raccoons are working together. It's going to be tremendous. It's going to be terrible. or it's going to be mixed.
We spoke to another designer about a game called, his game called Horse Majeure, that has a similar mechanic of there are two people in a horse costume, each rolling a D6, and then you combine them for like a PBTA type thing. And I love the idea of two people sharing the result, because then you can immediately point at, no, you were the one who messed up. I did my job.
When you're arguing in a trench coat, two raccoons chirping at each other angrily and everybody's looking at you funny.
Exactly.
And now you've raised the suspicion again because you just got in a fight with your partner on under the trench coat.
This game is very fun. So can you tell us a little bit more about the missions that you can run with this game?
Yeah, because running missions on a heist or a caper can be kind of hard and stressful. You think you have to have like a whole giant house or a whole location mapped out. And all the little features on there figured out. So I wanted to try and find a simple way of doing that. So I read a ton of RPGs on heists and capers, a ton of advice, everything I could find on the internet. I didn't like all of it, but I boiled it down to three different levels when you're going on a caper or when you watch a caper movie. There's infiltrating the location, there's navigating the location, and then there's the showdown at the objective. So the mission structures and Mission Impossible are that same thing. There's only those three levels that you get through. How are you going to get into the location at first? And there's an obstacle to overcome. A few little bullet points and points of interest that you might use, like toys to put together for the raccoons to play with and overcome an obstacle. And then once you're in there, how are you going to navigate inside? What's the security system look like roughly? And what are the few points of interest on that? And then when you get to the end, the actual objective, what's the death trap? What's the thing that's the villain has guarding? What's his grand plan? How is he going to monologue? And then what laser beam does he have set up to cut you in half to prevent you from capturing it? So when you look at a mission just from those three aspects, infiltrating, navigating, and reaching the objective, it gets very simple and it all turns out to fit on half a page of paper. You don't have to hold a whole lot on your head. You can get a very simple mission. So I've got six different pre-written missions in the game. And I've got tables to make, I think I did the math, over 2 billion different other missions. So you probably won't run out of material if you run this more than once.
But if you do run out of material, let us know.
Please,
and we
send me
have
an
some
email.
Questions for you.
So I'm curious, Stefan, why Zine Month? What brought you back to Zine Month? It sounds like you've done it before in the past. Why was Zine Month the right time to bring this game to life?
I had it ready, and I realized it's timing-wise, it was just going to work out fantastically, and it's a great time to get eyes on your project, because as an independent designer, I don't have any sort of ability to do much marketing, and I hate social media, so I don't have a presence on anything particular other than Discord. So it's a great time to get eyes, a lot of specific eyes on your project and have it run really well when I did it in 2021 with the Space Aces, the new guidebook, TNG, play on Star Trek.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you. I like a good pun. So it is fantastic that there's so many different creators coming together in one space and everybody's supporting one another. And there's the fun Discord where all the people are working together. And it's fun to be part of the community with that.
I've said this a couple times on this series that last year was the first year I really really paid attention to Zine Month. The previous year, it was in my periphery. Last year, because of this series, we really got into it. And I'm continually amazed by how giving this community is and how cooperative and collaborative this community is. And also how welcoming people are to we've talked to a bunch of people on this show that are first time game designers and are like pumped and excited because they already have a number of community members hyping up their game with them. And everyone's cheerleading each other in a really exciting way. It's very cold right now in New York City. February is a dreary time, but Zine Month happens, and then it kind of brightens your spirit, and it's really nice.
Yeah, it gets you through the winter months. It gives you something exciting to play with and look forward to. It brings me a lot of joy, so I'm happy to be part of it.
Since this is a box set, can you give us the rundown on everything that is in this box set? Because there's a bunch of stuff, and it's all very cool, and I want people to know about all of it.
Yeah, so it's got a box. That's what
Nailed
the set
it.
Comes in. Nailed it. And the box is cool because it's actually magnetic. There's a little magnetic clasp you open up with little raccoon hands on it, and it holds everything in. But inside the box, you've got a 32-page zine. You've got six dry erase character cards that you can draw from. You've got two different Gaze Master tool cards. So it a group of raccoons is called a gaze. Therefore, in the game, if you're the running it, you're the gaze master. So it's got the tool cards for you. I wanted custom coins, and that took a little bit of sourcing and work to get, but I've got custom coins for everybody. On one side is a raccoon head. On the back side is a raccoon butt with its tail, and it's just stinking adorable and perfect. And then I got cute little raccoon meeples, six of those in there. So because you can play with up to six people. Generally, you got two raccoons and two trench coats at that point. Or you can try and stuff them all in a trench coat and they each take a limb. It gets pretty wild. And then I got the dry erase bingo cards, and then I got some dry erase markers. So it's everything you need.
The coin is gorgeous, but me and Elliot were both, before this call, raving about the meeples because they are incredibly cute.
Those little meeples. They're just good little guys.
Good little guys. I wish they stacked. I tried to get them to be stackable, and then
that was going to be my question.
It's second edition. Second edition
is the stackable.
It'll come with a little trench coat too that you can wrap around them. I could not find a small trench coat, and I could not find a way to get a small trench coat made. So perhaps
that's
for the future.
So funny. I love that.
I really enjoy that you tried both of those things.
Come on.
Though.
How could you not?
I get it.
That's the mark of a dedicated designer. Yeah.
That's going deep.
So, Stefan, real practically, for people who are listening who want to support this game, where are you funding? When are you funding? And what are the different ways people can support during the campaign?
I'm launching on Kickstarter because that's where I've been my other ones. So I've got some people that I can message on there. It is going to launch on February 4th, probably at when I wake up a.m. Pacific Standard Time on February 4th. The zine itself will be available for about $10. The box set is about $25.
Oh, wow.
I'm able to keep the prices down, thankfully, as much as possible. Should not be a problem, I hope. No, but the printers are very reasonable that it came across. So they can support me there on Kickstarter. And then I don't have any presence on social media. So anybody that wants to tell their friends or tweet about it or whatever it's called these days, Blue Sky, anything, would be fantastic for supporting it because I can't get the word out beyond my own little communities that I've built up over time.
Gotta say, $25 for all that is a really impressive price point.
Yeah.
Good. I hope it sounds like that so that people will back the project. That's exciting.
I was just ready to pay $40, but I'll certainly pay $25.
Hold on. We're going to have to redo that. Let me reshoot that.
Well, listen, I mean, you could go up to $30 and I think no one would change their mind.
Yeah, I probably will sell it retail when it actually is released. And I sell it on my Etsy store and on my website, spaceaces.fun is my website, which links to my Etsy store. I'll probably sell it for $30 retail, but I want to get, the first time early birds a reward. So I think $25 will work just fine for that at that point.
I love that.
Before we get you out of here, as we work to a close, I do want to ask about your artist, your illustrator that you worked with, because I'm just so enamored by this art. Can you tell me about them and that kind of collaboration to find this amazing cartoonish style?
Oh, he is incredible. His online name is Tuna Seti V or Tuna Seti 5. He's Johan Andersen. He's available for, I'll give him a shout out because he's available for more work as well. I worked with him twice now, once with the card game I made that's in the Space Aces universe called Space Aces Landing Party. And it uses 60s style kind of Star Trek animated series, those style of Hanna-Barbera Star Trek officers. And he's perfect. That's all he does. That's the style he paints in, and he's a master at it. And we just click with what we want and what we want to see. So when you're making a 60s style old school James Bond game with raccoons, I mean, what other style are you going to use? So he's a joy to work with, and I'm so happy I found him online, just randomly browsing, I don't remember where, probably scrolling through some artists on Twitter or something at some point.
That rules. We will definitely link to him because would love to see more games with cool cartoony art like this. I was so captivated by your cover.
This is really just another reminder to everyone, your cover, people judge books by their cover. This is a damn good cover. And everything, everything inside I've loved, but the second I saw the cover, I was like, I have to know more. And then I went inside and I loved everything inside. So that was nice. That was good too.
The art is big enough to print as a life-size movie poster.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
At some point, I might send that out to all the backers just in that resolution. So if anyone wants to print it of that size, I'm not shipping that. I'm not taking that responsibility on. But
no, yeah, shipping posters is a pain.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So, Stefan, we've introduced a new segment this year that we are confidently calling A for Advice. And for first-time folks, we've been asking if they are running into a problem that we can help guide them through or talk through. And we would ask the same of you. But since you are a repeat creator, if you have advice you would like to share, that is just as good. But either a problem you're facing, although I hear this Kickstarter is going to be easy peasy and you're all done. You're going to sleep like a baby on February 4th. So maybe you've got advice you would want to pass on to our listeners who are designers.
Yeah, I've learned a lot of lessons because I've done it 4 or 5 times now with different games, and they've all funded, thankfully. The biggest lesson is get as much done in advance as possible, because you will save yourself so much stress. And when you're creating without a community of people waiting for it, it's a joy. This is exciting. I get to do this at my own pace. I'm happy. This is a hobby now. When you're now creating with a bunch of people waiting for you and a deadline, well, then your brain switches to a whole different mode, and you lose some of that joy sometimes. So create as much as you can beforehand. The other piece of advice is build a little community around your games. Like my first game I released was a small business card version of Space Aces. The whole game fit on a couple business cards. And it was free, and I was able to give it away, and it was just fun. It was, you know, my very first creation as a creator. I couldn't charge for it, and I didn't want to. But that ended up proving that I could make a fun game to a lot of people. And then I was able to take that and say, hey, if you like that, you're going to like this bigger version of it that's on ZineQuest 2021. Because of that, I've been able to just keep kind of snowballing slowly and slowly. I'm by no means at all considered successful in this industry. But I do have a little community, and I have learned some lessons with that. So start small, make a little community around your games. That will snowball into something, into more successful projects in the future, and do as much as you can ahead of time. You will save yourself so much stress.
Great piece of advice. Though if you are listening to this in the middle of Zine Month, the advice of do as much as you can in advance, You might be thinking about that for next year instead.
That's the next year. That's the next year advice. Yeah.
No, I love both of those. Stefan, thank you so much. We have one more question that we always like to ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation. And normally on the show, this is a recommendation about anything. Could be a book, movie, TV show, game. But since it's Zine Month, and we like to celebrate Zine Month creators, are there any Zine Month projects or creators that you'd like to shout out that you think our audience might be interested in?
Yeah, the zine that I'm most interested in that I've seen so far is A Perfect Rock by Deep Dark Games. And it looks like it uses a rock from the real world, and you're drawing cards and navigating a galaxy of space and seeing what is on the planet based on the cards that you draw. Just looks so fun and so cute. The artist seems very inviting. Speaking of good covers and good artwork, this one grabbed me instantly. And he's got, looks like, 1,700 followers on the project. So obviously it's grabbed others as well. But that's the one I would shout out as far as the most interesting project I've seen that has my attention, being a giant Trekkie and a giant sci-fi nerd.
We had Nick on this very same series last year for his game, Home, a Mech vs. Kaiju map-making game. And both in that case and in this case, I was impressed by just like how clear and good the game looked right off the bat, and how well he was able to like market it and just tell you what it is so quickly.
Yeah, he's really, really good at that.
Those are two games that I'm like, I would point anyone to study and be like, this is how you present a game if you want people to understand it and get excited about buying it.
I will definitely study him for next time and for this one as well. That's a good piece of advice.
Well, we think you're doing a pretty good job.
We're you're doing great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Mission Impossible, that's going to be on my shelf. Stefan, thank you so much for coming on Talk of the Table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you, and specifically where they can find Mission Impossible?
Thanks very much for having me. You can find me at my website on spaceaces.fun. There's a link to the community Discord there that you can get to. And you can find Mission Impossible on Kickstarter, launching February 4th, sometime in the morning.
One more big thank you to Tom Lavery and Stefan Hans for joining us on the show. Please, please be sure to go check out both of these games, Horse Majeure and Mission Impossible, on Kickstarter. We have three more exciting Zine Month episodes on the way with six more incredible Zine Month designers. So don't go anywhere. Join us next week for our second Zine Month episode. And remember, if you want more gaming content from us, please join the Many Sided newsletter, the Many Sided Media Discord, or support this show on Patreon at patreon.com/manysidedmedia. Your support means the world. It helps us make the show, and you can get exciting bonus content like our recent 2-hour roundtable on actual play with Dr. Emily Friedman and our friend from Worlds Beyond Number, Taylor Moore. Please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody. I don't like how good you are at that, actually.
That's very good. Very good.
I've also got a good elephant with...
You know, that is a good elephant.
No, it's ideas for my next game. Thank you.
Yes. Awesome. Credit me.